The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 612 for Sunday, July 3rd, 2016. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We share your, well, we share it all. That's what we do here. We share it all. And the goal is to learn at least, I'm raising the bar, four new things every time we get together. And I think we're going to be able to do that and then some here today. Sponsors for this episode include Text Expander from Smile at smilesoftware.com/geek. We'll talk more about that shortly. Mac Weldon, a new sponsor for the show, where coupon code MGG at macweldon.com, that's MACKWELDON.com, saves you 20% on some of the most comfortable clothing I've ever worn. And I can't wait to tell you about it because, and I know that sounds crazy. And also Casper at casper.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG saves you $50 on, well, the best mattress I've ever slept on in my life, including one that I slept on recently, and I have a story to tell you about that. So we'll talk all about all of that and more in a little bit here in Durham, New Hampshire, at least ostensibly. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
Yeah, John F. Braun. How you doing today, John F. Braun?
Great.
So we should warn everyone, I say I'm here in Durham, New Hampshire, which is true as I say it, but we are pre-recording a couple of episodes, this being one and the next one being the next, where I am not in Durham, New Hampshire, because we're traveling throughout Europe for the next couple of weeks with the kids. So I believe when this episode comes out, I will be in London, England, is the plan. And I may be landing. Let's see. No, I'll be in London by the time this one is released. So fun stuff. Got all my travel stuff together. It's been kind of fun actually pulling it all together, figuring out we wanted to have data connections while we're there. So we're using several listeners helped out. And one in particular really helped out, getting us SIM cards for Three, Three, in the UK, because they have great roaming plans that basically go throughout Europe for pretty short money. So it's been interesting trying to buy credits for a UK data plan when you're not in the UK, because I guess all sorts of regulations basically prohibit that. So you got to kind of find loopholes, but we found enough loopholes to get data service for when we get on the ground, and we'll deal with the rest of it when we get there. So it's fun stuff. So that's what I'm up to here, John. I'm up to my ears. How about you? Anything exciting to report before we get to Chris's question here?
Speaking of travel, well, I had a great triumph in doing a repair non-computer, which I mentioned to you, but I'll just briefly tell people here. So I, it was following basic troubleshooting. So I was having a problem with my trusty 94 Saturn. All of a sudden, out of the blue, it started, the engine started running very rough. And I'm like, oh man, not again. I'm like, what could it be? And there's a car that one can still work on for the most part. And so I'm like, all right, well, you know, it's probably one of the cylinders isn't firing.
Yeah.
I had just replaced the spark plugs recently because I think the problem was creeping up.
Got it.
It was kind of running kind of weird. So I'm like, okay, well, it's not the spark plugs because I just got them. But, you know, I checked them, pulled them out, looked at them. You know, they seem to be working. Got some wires. That wasn't it. Probably highly unlikely it's wires. Wires, you know, usually last a long time. And then beyond that, there's something called a coil. This is the thing that generates the spark. And so I actually found a video.
I will ask, we say this is car talk for Apple geeks, but it's not actually car talk. So
this is car talk.
Speed it along. That's right. Yeah.
Well, basically, the next component in line is something called the coil. This is the component that generates the spark that makes the spark that explodes and makes the car run. I was like, you know, maybe it's that. Well, it's the next thing in line. I'm like, okay, went to my local car parts store. It's a $40 part. It's a pretty standard for GM. There was that moment of truth, and I found a video online that showed how to take it out and all. It's pretty straightforward. So pulled out the old one, put in the new one, and there was that moment of truth. Got in the car, started it up. Ta-da!
Sweet!
Much less expensive than bringing it to a place to analyze it, because it probably cost more than $40.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just working backwards from the source until you find the defective component. So that made me happy, because I'm really not in a position to... I'd like to keep this car running as long as possible.
Sure.
Like most of my toys.
Sure.
And tools.
All right, I have a I have an audio comment to play, John, and we'll let Scott take it from here.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Scott from Los Angeles. I know you open up every show by saying you are our car talk for the Apple geeks, which is absolutely true. But what's going to happen when Apple releases Titan? You'll just be car talk at that point, right? Or the... Yep, that sounds about right. All right, thanks for doing such a great show. Keep up the great work.
He sent that in a while back, but it seemed appropriate to share today here. So, yeah, we may actually become more like Car Talk, although I don't think the conversation we just had will be relevant, except for, of course, the troubleshooting skills, because I don't think there's going to be spark plugs in any car Apple releases. So it's interesting.
You think?
Dude.
I know totally so. Electric?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question about that.
I don't think I'd want a totally electric car, to tell you the truth. Though people seem to like the Tesla. Is that totally electric? Isn't that a hybrid?
No.
Oh, it is.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you should go drive a Tesla. You would enjoy that process. It's a really... For those of you that haven't driven them, it's worth a test drive. It has tons and tons of power. But it's this very smooth acceleration, because it's a there's no gears, so to speak. It just goes, and boy, does it go. It's very, very cool. Yeah. It'll change. It changed my perspective of what was possible with an electric car. Really well done. So yeah, fun stuff. But for now, we are not Car Talk. So. Let's go to Chris here and see where Chris can take us. So, John, we had this conversation in the last show about a listener not being able to paste into his and it was listener Chris not being able to paste into mail messages with the command key. He had to do it, or he couldn't do it by right clicking. He had to do it with the command key or the menu. And, John, you want to take us to where the final answer was?
I will take us to the final answer. So, as it turns out, we needed a bit more information, and Chris provided it. So, great troubleshooting. So, he isolated it. So, it was not copying and pasting from any program. It was just from Chrome, the Chrome browser. And I was like, huh, well, that's kind of interesting. Yeah. So he's like, could you verify this? And so I tried it, and I don't run Chrome that often. I don't know about you. I typically run Safari. Then if something doesn't work, then I'll run Firefox. And then if it doesn't work in that, then I'll run Chrome. Or if I need to run Flash.
Sure.
Content with Flash, I'll run Chrome, because Chrome has Flash baked into it. But I verified the behavior. And so then I did a little surfing online. And believe it or not, I found this dandy article called Having Trouble Pasting Chrome URLs on a Mac? You're not alone, and a fix is coming.
Sweet.
Apparently, someone had, and this actually, the article also links to, I guess, their bug tracking database. And apparently, this is an issue that was recently introduced. Someone fiddled with the copy and paste code within Chrome, and that's the problem. So, I'm sure they're going to fix it, or I guess you could revert to an earlier version. I suspect it's not a problem with earlier versions, or just don't, use another browser. So, but that's a weird, that is just such a weird, subtle bug there.
Yeah. I almost want to look, is the Chrome source code open source? Cause it would just be interesting to see what they did that broke pasting in that way. My guess is they're it's on the clipboard. Maybe I should just look at the results of the clipboard with a clipboard manager. because it's weird, right? That it would be that whatever's on the clipboard couldn't be pasted one way, but could be pasted another. It's just bizarre. Anyway.
Yeah.
Nice find. Yeah.
Oh, you already pasted it. Yes. So that's the bug report. And actually when I,
so John's talking about that. I pasted it into the chat room. For those of you that have no idea what he just said, it's at macgeekab.com/stream. Some folks will listen along live. So they're getting this show a few days early, but yeah. So thank you. And hello to everyone in the chat room.
Yeah. But I think someone actually identified the portion of code. If you look in that bug report, they actually identified the portion of code that someone fiddled with that broke the paste feature, or the copy.
The awesome copy
feature.
Huh. Cool. All right. JP, take us to where we're going next.
Hey, John. Hey, Dave. It's JP from LA with a question about tvOS and cord cutting. I currently enjoy my Apple TV and all that it offers me, but I also have a DirecTV subscription. And, of course, as you know, you have to log in with your DirecTV in order to access content in all these apps. What about the person who doesn't have Dish or cable and they plug their Apple TV in and hook it up to their internet and there's no provider to log into to get CBS or ABC or CNN for that matter? Is there, does that just mean you just can't have that content? Like I can't go to HGTV channel network and get, you know, watch Barnwood Builders because I need a subscription of some kind to some service? Or is there something I'm missing? Cut me off, please.
All right, you're cut off. That's it. You've had enough. No, so this is it's a good question, JP, because initially that was the case, right? If you had cut your cord, and I realize a satellite dish is already cutting the cord, but if you had not had an aggregating provider, is what I'll call the cable companies and the satellite companies and all that. If you did not have an aggregating provider, then yeah, you were kind of out of luck. But that has changed over time. And not every channel is available directly, but many of them are. CBS, for example, has a CBS All Access Pass that you can get either by signing in with your provider's login, and you know that's just how that works, or for about $6 a month, you can buy a CBS All Access Pass. All Access is a bit of a misnomer. It comes with just about everything, but NFL games are very much excluded from that. And that's sort of the next big hurdle for the whole cord cutting thing is the NFL, to be quite honest with you. And they're working on it. That wall is starting to come down, as you've seen. They're streaming some games and, you know, doing that. They're just being very careful about how they're standing at the precipice of they're standing on atop a pile of cash that keeps getting larger, and they don't want that trend to stop. So they're being very careful how they move forward. And they've got a lot of exclusive deals with the networks and, you know, all of that stuff. But yeah, so, you know, HBO for the longest time, you could only get it. You could get it on your Apple TV, but you again had to have a subscription. And now they have HBO Now. That allow HBO Go is the one that lets you get your stuff from you know, your provider via HBO, and then HBO Now is their separate app. So yeah, they are aware of you, but you have to check before you cut that cord. You need to look, and I don't know about HGTV, right? You need to look and see, do they offer something where you can sign up directly? And if the answer is yes, then rock on. It's fun.
I wouldn't say fun.
I'm surprised you haven't cut the cord yet, John.
I'm happy with my cable subscription. I'm
sure.
Necessarily happy with what they charge.
Well, that's what I mean. That's why. Less. That's why I'm because a lot of people cut the cord to save money. If you know, look, I'm only watching these, you know, four shows, or at any given point in time, I only watch a handful of things. if you do the math, it's like, well, you could either get the shows by paying your $6 to CBS or this, or just, you know, buy them from iTunes.
It's more convenient.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I record a lot of them. And the thing is, when I do miss a show, so every now and then the TiVo will have a hiccup or something and I'll miss a show. What I found in a lot of cases, yeah, I can log into the Apple TV and, you know, I log in with my Optimum Online identification, and then it says, oh, okay, you can watch it on the Apple TV. Sometimes it won't, though. I think it is actually the CBS. A lot of them, some of the channels will let you watch all content going back as far back as possible. Some want to ding you extra money, which kind of has me shaking my fist. A lot of times the shows that I watch, if I do miss them, I can actually watch them in a browser. A lot of the networks will show the show the next day.
Sure.
And you have to watch it in a browser. And that's fine. You know, the resolution, you know, it's HD and I'm okay with that. So I'll mirror from my computer to the Apple TV in that case.
Yep. Yeah, total. Right. No, there's ways. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but you're right. The convenience of using an aggregated provider is right there. And Apple is aware of that. I think that's where, the single sign-on stuff and all of that in the new TV OS is coming from. It's like, yeah, you know, this will make things happy with the networks if you have them, or with the provider if you have them, but then also, you know, maybe separate too. So,
well, you know, that I think was actually an implementation oops on Apple's part. Is that you shouldn't, it was like storing something in a password manager. It's like, guys, I submitted this information once. Why do I have to log into, you know, they should have stored a cookie or whatever saying, okay, once you've authenticated with your cable provider, you shouldn't have to do it again.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they fixed that, because that also had me shaking my fist at times. I'm like, I already told you this. You forgot already?
Yeah. So people in the chat room, Brian Monroe and Mikey, are talking about Sling TV has a bundle now where they, I'm looking here and literally learning this while we're recording, but it's single and multi-stream services with the addition of NBC local channels and other content providers. So they have $20 a month and $25 a month for single Sling boxes or single Sling streams and multi Sling streams, but lots of your live TV, including, it looks like, HGTV. So for $20 a month, you can stream with Sling to your various devices. So this is a big deal. Very, very cool. We'll put a link. There was a 9to5 Toys article, but that came out. So yeah, I have no doubt, like anything else we talk about here on Mac Geek Gab, there's now a can of worms, a good can of worms. Don't take this negatively, open, that will keep talking about, because I think this whole concept of cutting the cord is great. It drives me crazy. You buying songs instead of having to buy albums, right? It's things are digital now, so we should be able to get exactly what we want and laser target that, as opposed to being forced to buy things. Of course, this Sling bundle is sort of more of the old, because you're forced to buy a bunch of things. But for $20 a month, maybe it's the right price.
Yeah,
the trick
the whole
is you still got to
still a mess.
Yeah, you still got to get your internet access. And of course, that's where people like, Comcast and the bigger providers have their hold on you, because they give you a discount, a hefty discount, or perhaps better said, you pay a hefty penalty to get broadband access without getting your TV channels from the same provider. So interesting stuff. Wow. Very interesting. Cool. Thanks for asking, JP. I like it when things kind of open up and go different directions. So it's good. All right. You want to take us to, or I'll take us to Mark, and we'll see what Mark has to say. Mark writes, since a recent update to iTunes, I'm seeing a message telling me that Find My Friends and Podcasts are only available on iOS. Is there a way to remove this annoying message? Wait would be the best advice that I have. So this is a side effect of Apple making these apps deletable, for lack of a better term, on iOS 10, which of course is available in beta for developers and will eventually, or shortly, I should say, be available for beta for anybody that wants to sign up for the public beta. And so they have to be downloadable from the App Store. It used to be that they were, like, when they were truly in beta, you'd just download them from the developer resource, but now they need to be downloadable from the App Store. And so iTunes gets a little freaked out about that. My guess is that iTunes, you know, as part of this is a part of the iOS 10 beta process that everyone has to participate in, I suppose. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. But Apple, I'm assuming with a future update to iTunes, will address that in a better way or in a clearer way, I think. What do you
think?
I'm
wondering if you're, still going to have to, because so the problem here, so one, if you're on iOS, just if you don't know this, but if you hold down on any of the apps and you hold down for a couple of seconds, all of a sudden they're going to start wiggling. Like they're happy or I don't know, or they're scared, because what happens then is that you should see on a lot of apps a little X in the upper left hand corner. And if you hit that, it'll delete that app. The thing is, a lot of Apple apps are not deletable, and that frustrates a lot of people. My solution to that, Dave, is I have a folder called Apple apps, and I put all the ones that I don't use in that folder and hide it away so they don't clutter my space.
Well, right. But now with iOS 10, a lot, not all, but a lot of Apple's apps will be deletable. And we talked about this. Yep. What's important to note, though, is they are not actually deleting the app from your phone in most cases. You're just deleting the icon, because things like Mail, the frameworks of Mail are required for, say, the email, this web page sheet that comes up in Safari. So you're not deleting the app. It won't free up space other than the visual space on your screen. So it's just important. It's more like they're hiding them. I get why Apple chose this paradigm to hide them. Because it makes the most sense, right? But my guess is they also consider just a slider in the settings app that says make this appear, kind of like the iCloud Drive app, right? Do you want this to appear on your home screen or not? That model is more appropriately representative of what's actually happening here, in that it's still on your phone, it's just not exposed. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine that they're doing it with the App Store, but again, this does it just causes this little hiccup in iTunes. It's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Yeah,
it's interesting, because you've had this ability on Apple TV for quite a while now. Is that if there's a channel you don't get, you can hide it, because why display it if you can't get it?
Right.
Same with the phone. Like I don't have a watch, but the watch app is there, and I can't delete it.
Yeah.
All right.
Sweet. All right. Yeah, moving along. And yeah, I'm not running any of the betas yet. Normally, I would be running the iOS 10 beta on my iPad and the OS 10, or now Mac OS beta, on my laptop. But with this Europe trip, I really would have liked the Watch OS beta to go with me. But I need my phone and potentially my computer. My computer, I'm not planning on doing anything with it, but, you know, I'm bringing it as a backup. So to bring a backup that is not entirely known to me is not a good idea. So as soon as I get back, then I'll dive into all this stuff and we'll be able to talk about it. But John, you could dive in anytime. Just saying, you going to take us to PJ, John?
I will. And PJ writes, so for years, you guys would make sure to turn off Time Machine before recording. And I assume it is still the case. Actually, in my case, no.
No.
I'm not sure about you, Dave.
Nope.
And I'll tell you why in a moment. Well, I'll tell you why.
There's two reasons for it, but I'll let you
Well, I think the reason is that we turned it off because when it was doing it with a rotational drive, it would cause that was consuming
too many interrupts.
I would say hardware. Yes, it was wreaking havoc with the hardware, and it would cause interruptions in basically our Skype connection. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the recording. Yeah. Any of the above. That's right. Yep.
Since I've moved over and you've moved over to an SSD, I have found that running Time Machine during the show is not an issue, and that if it's happening, I don't even notice it.
But it's also not an issue because I use Time Machine Editor to have Time Machine only fire when my machine is idle.
Yes. And you, and you got ahead of me, and that was one answer, but to continue here. And he says that too. He's like, it seems to have gotten better with SSDs. Yes, it has. So,
yeah.
Then he continues, I have found the nice/re-nice, but for some reason I do have a few apps that chew with their mouths wide open. Re-nice is a utility that will let you.
It's not a utility. It's a Unix command, right?
Well, there's something called, I did find a utility. I think it's called Renicer that provides a GUI to it. But the thing is, there is, you can actually find this. So if you go to the command line and you do a man is a manual page, and you say man nice, it's going to tell you about this command that's called nice.
Sure.
And basically what nice does, in theory, though, I personally wouldn't fiddle with it. In theory, it should make apps play nice with one another, and that you can escalate, or I guess de-escalate, the priority of any process by issuing this command. And you have to be the administrator or root to do that. He's asking, well, first he says, is there a GUI you guys have found to make apps play nice? And I think it is this utility. And I did find it. It's rather old.
I was going to say, I can't find anything current. There's App Priority and there's one called Renicer. But
the Renicer, I found yeah, that.
That's
it has been updated.
We're not recommending that. It's No, I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't use either one of those. They haven't been updated in many OS versions. So.
I mean, it works. I mean, I actually downloaded it and ran it, and it functions.
Okay.
I think in this case,
yeah. The
UI I'm not going to
for nice hasn't changed much, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So this utility, you could use it to set the priority of your processes. Like I said, it hasn't. I don't see a problem with the app not being updated because the functionality really hasn't changed in what it does. The thing is, I don't know. I think it's just a recipe for disaster to try to second guess the operating system, Dave, when things are by setting the priority yourself rather than letting the OS do it, because that's the job of the OS.
Although the OS doesn't necessarily know which one you want to prioritize. So, there's St. Clair Software, who makes Default Folder, has a piece of software called App Tamer that does some of this stuff where it reduces the amount of CPU power for apps you're not using. It can even pause apps if you want to do that. You can set things for specific apps. So you can say, look, on their webpage, they have an example with Chrome where it's like, slow down this app if it uses more than X percent of the CPU. Stop this app completely when it's not in front, or only stop or slow this app down when it's hidden, right? And so you can really do some cool stuff with that. That would probably be the best app to use if you want to really control things. But you're not going to get everything, because a lot of things hand tasks off to the system, and then you see kernel task using like a ton of CPU, and it doesn't go anywhere.
And he showed us that. And actually, he showed us a screenshot here. And I'm going to assume he has a 8-core machine because it shows kernel task consuming 727%. Now, his guess, and I would say it's
important to note, his screenshot looks like it's from iStat Menus, though. iStat Menus doesn't always get it right in terms of the process name. So you should look at Activity Monitor to make sure it's truly kernel task as opposed to identified as some other process. I've seen an inconsistency between the two there, and Activity Monitor is more correct.
Right. So anyway, he suspected it was Time Machine and Mail app that was causing his processor to have his machine consume nearly all processing resources. And that's a reasonable assumption, I think, because I think they would appear under kernel task, right?
Time Machine's usually backup D, and Mail is usually Mail.
Yeah, so I don't know why, if they're having a problem and it also shows up in kernel task, or like you said, iStat menus is just getting it wrong. So I'll stand behind not doing the nice thing. Though you offered an alternative, there are ways to set the priority. As you mentioned, so what I was going to say is one thing that I found with Time Machine is that I'm not crazy about its default of doing something every hour. And so as you mentioned, Dave, there's a swell utility called Time Machine Editor, and they've actually enhanced it fairly recently so you could either schedule. So for example, I schedule it on my MacBook Pro every 4 hours. Or six, because I think that's frequent enough. I think an hour is too frequent.
Sure. But you need to decide for you, right? I mean, that's the beauty of this. Yeah.
Right. And on my Mini, I actually set it for once a day at 3 a.m., I think.
Okay.
Not at the same time as my carbon copy cloner, because that gets weird. The thing I noticed that's kind of weird is that if my carbon copy cloner clone is mounted, Time Machine gets rather confused. It thinks that it should be backing that up as well, probably because it's a clone. I don't know. I don't know if it's a bug or it's just me, but I try to keep them separate. I don't like the clone drive mounted when Time Machine is running.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Because again, I think Time Machine sees it and it's like, oh, I better back this up too. And it's
you can omit it.
Exclude it.
You can exclude it rather. But yeah, I'm with you. I have carbon copy cloner eject that thing as soon as it's finished. Yeah. I'm excited about this AppTamer thing. I had heard about it. I think we might have even mentioned it on an earlier episode, but looking at this, man, I can only think about battery life on my laptop. If I can tell it to, make apps in the background chill out, that would save a ton of battery life. That's my biggest problem with my, my Air is old. Well, it's not that old. It's 2011, right? So it's 5 years old. And a lot of times the CPU is just running full tilt. So,
Look at this.
It's cool, man. I'm going to dig into
money?
This.
They want money for it?
Oh, of course guys. They want money. $15. Come on.
Oh,
yeah.
I think I'm going to give it a whirl.
I'm going to give it a whirl. It says I can try it for free for 15 days. So my guess is while I'm in Europe, I will likely be buying this thing. So there you go. Sweet.
Right. Yeah, I got it on my browser. So PJ, maybe try that instead.
Yeah.
So the recommendation for Time Machine is Time Machine and Editor. And then if you think Mail is acting up, the only thing I would, because Mail shouldn't be consuming all resources. The only thing I could think of is if you ever have problems with Mail is you may have a plugin that's either old or acting up.
Yeah.
And where you find those currently is either in library mail bundles or your user directory, library mail bundles, should be the places where Mail plugins are located. And you may just want to review those and make sure that they're up to date and, you don't have any that are conflicting or fighting, because that could cause Mail to go wacky other than it just being Mail.
Just being Mail. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mail plugin manager, while we're on the subject of Mail, and that's from a company with a new name called Small Cubed, but really it's Scott Little and Scott Morrison, who both each made separate Mail plugins. Scott Morrison was, it's Mail Tags and Mail Acton is what he used to make. And I can't remember the name of his company. And then Scott Little was Little Known Software. Ironic that I'd remember the one with the name Little Known Software, but he's a Rush fan, so it's all good. But they've combined forces. And so now Smallcubed makes all of their plugins together and has Mail Plugin Manager, which is a super handy thing to manage all your mail plugins. As it says, it will check to see if they are up to date. And it also has a little bit, I don't want to call it a store, but a directory of a lot of mail plugins, not just the ones these guys sell, but lots of them. So if you're looking for different things to extend mail, Mail Plugin Manager is probably the best place to start, because you can not only make sure your plugins are up to date, but also find out about other plugins. Like, I didn't realize that DocStar had come back. That was one I used to love, and it was end of life, and now someone has resurrected it. So Mail Plugin Manager, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah. I have that, because I think at one point it was installed along with Signature Profiler. I think he bundled it.
Or he recommended. Yeah, it was bundled with Signature Profiler. I think it's bundled with any of their plugins, and for good reason. It's a great utility. So, yeah.
Ooh, I got to update mine. Because actually, I just, yeah. Well, I'm looking. Here's the problem. Oh, you know, I think I've seen it crash. Mine is copyright 2012. The problem is, when I say update, it says I'm having a problem updating this, dude.
Oh.
It hasn't been able to update itself for a long time. Oh, maybe, my goodness.
Maybe you need to download a new one. Yeah, yeah.
All right. I think that's what we got for you on prioritizing and Time Machine and mail.
And a bonus on mail. Yeah. I'm excited to check out AppTamer. Okay, that's enough about AppTamer. We'll talk about it in, you know, a couple of shows when I get back from Europe. We'll both have some experience with it. We're doing a Cool Stuff Found show the day after I get back, less than 24 hours after I get off a plane. So I'm sure that's going to be crazy. Yeah. But thankfully we have, like, you know, 85 things in the Cool Stuff Found queue. So who knows what that one's going to be like. For now, though, I mentioned three sponsors at the beginning of the show that I was really excited to talk about. John, can I do that now?
Yes, you may.
All right. Three sponsors today, and I'm excited to tell you about each one of them for a variety of different reasons. I'll start with Casper at casper.com/MGG. Coupon code MGG saves you $50 off of the best mattress I've ever experienced in my life. I mentioned at the end of last show, and I wanted to expand on this story. I was in San Francisco for WWDC, you know, and I rented an Airbnb place. And it said it had a foam mattress. I thought, okay, fine. You know, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Now, normally when I travel to the West Coast, because I'm on the East Coast, I always use Ambien to go to sleep. I don't use it at home. So it's not like I have a problem or anything. But I just use it. And it like, when I've been doing it for the last 3 or 4 years, it makes all the difference in the world. Well, I was 3 days into this trip before I realized that I had not yet taken Ambien. I did not use any aids to get to sleep whatsoever. This bed was so comfortable there. And on the last day, as I'm leaving, I'm like, I gotta look. Wait a minute. What's going on? This is weird. Sure enough, it's a Casper mattress, folks. So comfortable, easy to sleep on. I mean, it was just, it's like, perfect. Really perfect. It's multiple types of foam so that you get the right snuggliness, and it's not too hot and it's not too cold, and it's just perfect. And here's the thing, you get to test it out the same way I did, but in your house. You don't have to do it in some other dude's house. You do it in yours, because when you go to casper.com/MGG and you place your order, they ship it to you, and for 100 days you get to test this thing. And if you don't like it, they'll take it back. It's that simple. You just got to check it out. And coupon code MGG saves you $50. You can sleep as comfortably as I do, because I have one here, and as I did in San Francisco. Our thanks to Casper for sponsoring this episode. The second sponsor I want to tell you about today is a new sponsor for Mac Geek Gab, although the name is close. It's called Mac Weldon, MacWeldon.com. When John Donahue at Backbeat Media sold this spot, he said, I think you're going to love this stuff, Dave, because you're going to love fancy underwear. And I thought, well, thanks, Johnny D. I don't know what that says about me, but you know what? Johnny D was right. This stuff is awesome. So they gave me a credit so I could go and learn about the stuff, you know, and shop. I've shopped 3 times since then, spending my own money. This stuff is fantastic. They believe in smart design, premium fabrics, and super simple shopping. And I got to admit, all 3 of those things are totally true. Like, I've never had a t-shirt that is as comfortable as this. I've definitely never had underwear this comfortable. I know it's crazy that I'm this excited about this stuff. The first pair that I got, I ordered a size that was too small. They said, well, we don't want it back, but we'll ship you another size. And that wasn't because I was me. It was because I was a customer of theirs. We do this for anybody. First pair of underwear, if you get it wrong, they just ship you a new one. If it's a shirt or whatever, they just have you ship it back and they ship you a new one. So they work on the size thing, and they don't charge you for the shipping back and forth or anything like that. It's, you know, they're fair about it. They're more than fair about it, in fact. But the smaller underwear, my son, it fit him, so we washed it, obviously, and then he wears it. He's thinking about spending his own money to buy, 6 or 8 pairs of these things. It's amazing. So you got to check this stuff out. And you can do it with 20% off using promo code MGG. So go to macweldon.com. That's MACKWELDON.com. Coupon code MGG saves you 20%. It's underwear, it's socks, it's shirts. They've got sweatshirts. You got to just do yourself a favor, guys. Check this out. Our thanks to Mack Weldon for sponsoring this episode. And our third sponsor today is Smile at smilesoftware.com/geek. That's where you always go to see what they've got special for you, Mac Geek Gab listeners. And this week, it's Text Expander. Text Expander is, again, one of those tools. I say this every time we talk about it. That I could not live without. We couldn't publish the show without it. We could, but it would be really difficult. We actually use it literally right as I'm talking here. We're using it to build the show notes for the show. I've got to be talking, right? John's talking. We're doing the show, but we're coming up with links that we want to leave in the show notes. Now, we have to build the show notes in HTML. So the code's got to be just right. Otherwise, the HTML breaks. Then when you visit, the site at macgeekgab.com or whatever, it breaks. We can't have it breaking. So we need the code exactly right. But we also got to be able to do this stuff while we're talking. The way it works, copy the link to the clipboard right from Safari. I go into our document where we save the show notes, which also happens to be a Google Doc in Safari. Doesn't matter. And I type comma SN. This puts the URL right in the right place in the HTML that it also spells out, and then puts my cursor in the right place to be able to type what I want to appear as the title or the text associated with the link on the page. So I can copy something while I'm talking here. I type comma SN, which is now just totally automatic in my fingers. And then I start typing whatever I want it to be. I can go clean it up later and I can do it while I'm talking to you here. In fact, I just did one now. And you probably didn't notice me skipping around too much. This is what Text Expander is for. Of course, it's for a whole lot more. And now Text Expander saves your snippets in the cloud so that you have the same snippets on all your computers, on all your devices. It's brilliant. Really awesome tool that just sits there and does some fantastic stuff. You've got to check it out. Go to smilesoftware.com/geek. Our thanks to Smile for sponsoring this episode. And our thanks to Chris, who has a great little tip for us from last episode. We were talking about Time Machine in the last episode, and he said he'd sent 2 things in. Number one, if you're backing up over a network, he says, try running Apple's OS X server, or soon to be Mac OS server, on a Mac, and use the Time Machine server feature that is built into OS X server. This seems to make the process far more tolerant of client disconnects. He says, I've had no issues with Time Machine corruption for the clients that have been doing network Time Machine backups this way for at least a couple of versions of OS X now. That's very interesting. I asked Chris to clarify some of this. It's not doing anything overly intelligent. It still appears to be your client computer managing the sparse bundle and all of that. Time Machine server allows you to set quotas so that, or limits is a better way to think of it, so that users can't use more than more space than you want them to, because of course Time Machine will just fill up whatever you give it eventually. So it's not quite doing what it should do, I don't think, and neither does Chris, but it, you know, in his experience, it's been working well. So for $20, OS X server, yet another reason to go get OS X server. Thoughts on that before we move to his next Time Machine tip, my friend, Mr. Braun?
No, I'll have to try it out.
Yeah. So are you, I know you talk about OS X server quite a bit. Do you run it on one of your machines there? Are you running it on your Mac Mini?
I haven't installed, but at this point I'm not running.
Not really.
Okay. I'm not running any. I'm not, you, none of the services are on at this point.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. And to be fair, we all have those services at our disposal. OS X server is just a very well put together GUI for managing a lot of these things that already exist in OS X, is essentially how that works. You might have a couple of things that actually come with it, but I think for the most part, it's just a GUI for everything or for a lot of things that are already there.
Yeah. And I think in the past we would, you know, every now and then we mention a way that you could hack OS X and do stuff on the command line to enable the features.
Of course. Don't
waste your time doing that. Just throw down the $20.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even I threw down I threw down the $99 for the
I was going to say, yeah, you get, right. Yeah, you paid more. That's right. Yeah.
But for $20, I mean, you know, especially versus what some other companies charge for a server OS.
It's true.
That's a steal, man.
It's true. It's true. All right. And then I don't know why, maybe it's the caffeine. As you were talking, I was just sitting here marveling at how nice this 27 inch screen looks. And this isn't even the Retina screen here. I don't know why I'm saying that. It's the caffeine. I'm all hopped up, John. Chris also says, but it is nice. Because of how my desk is here, I've got to be a little closer to the screen. But I was really what I was realizing is I have my font sizes much smaller on this than I do my Retina iMac at my desk downstairs. But it works because I'm closer to it. Retina or Pure would be even nicer, but you know, it's not. I'm going to take my family to Europe instead. So, I still lead a charmed life. That's not a complaint. So he says, repairing Time Machine backups takes a long time. If you invoke FSCK_HFS properly from the command line, you can give it the utility extra arguments, like using the -C argument to tell it to use much more RAM. That makes it go faster for disks with gobs of files, like a Time Machine disk. There's a Mac OS X Hints article that he sent us to, but he said, you know, for example, sudo FSCK_HFS -F. I don't know what -f does. I think -f means fix. -c, and then 2200M, which is 2200 megabytes, so 2.2 gigabytes essentially. And then the name of the disk, which for him is /dev/disk2, and this Mac OS X Hints article talks about finding it. Even though it's old, it's still correct. So very, very cool stuff. And thank you for sharing that. Because yeah, that's the big problem is, without being able to store all that stuff in RAM, FSCK has to work a little more slowly. So, yeah. Thoughts on that, John?
I think that's mentioned in passing in that, Time Machine repair article. I think he mentions at one point the same thing is, hey, yeah, if you got the RAM, use it. So it, speeds things up.
Yeah. Yeah. It totally makes sense. It's frustrating when apps don't do that automatically, but I mean, again, like we said before, you know, the operating system can only do so much for you. So speaking of operating systems and all of that, we have a note here or a question here from Sushil asking, I have a rather interesting problem. It says my wife has an iPhone 6 and I have a 6 Plus, both running 9.3.2. The phones are about a year and a half old. Our phones have worked great, but exactly 2 days ago, they both mysteriously have begun to drain their batteries rather precipitously. My phone, which would be down to 50% at the end of a typical day, will be dead by 2 p.m. Just sitting at my desk for the past hour, my wife's phone battery probably fell from 100% to 82%. I have tried different things, including restarting the phones, turning off location services, deleting my Exchange account and then reloading it. He says, because I read that somewhere. Turning off Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. Exploring the battery app under settings did not seem to show excessive use by anything in particular. Also turning off my VPN. My wife even called AppleCare and found them very unhelpful, and we're now waiting for a Genius Bar appointment. What gives? Are others experiencing this issue recently? It seems unusual for it to happen all of a sudden. You're right. There's a lot of things that can cause battery drain on phones. Very helpful to note that it was two phones that were going through this. So there's a couple of things that will run in the background. Uploading iPhotos, syncing anything with iCloud or any other sync service, but iCloud, if you and your wife are sharing something via iCloud, maybe it needed to do a resync of all of that data, whatever that data was. And so perhaps, you know, there was that. The other thing that would affect multiple phones in the same location is cell service. When your phone has a weak cell signal, it will be looking for a new signal more often, and that causes it to use more battery. So good cell signal will actually reduce your battery consumption because your phone knows that it's got something reliable and it can be very power efficient at that point. But if it can't find a tower to sync up with, then it sort of has to leave the radio on all the time. The phones do... I'm going to oversimplify this and probably screw it up anyway, but when a phone connects to a cell tower, it sort of syncs up with it and says, all right, are we in sync? We're happy. We both know what we're doing. And it asks the tower, or the tower tells it, here's the frequency at which I am going to send updates to you. And the phone says, great. And then the phone can shut itself off in between and only turn on at the interval that it knows it's going to get a signal from the tower. And this is happening very, very frequently, but not always. So the phone's radio doesn't have to be actively on. It can kind of, you know, burst itself and save battery. Well, when it has a weak signal or it's jumping from tower to tower, that's not how it works. It's got to be on and obviously burns up more radio or more battery. So that can be part of it. And he did write us back a couple of days later after this email and said, hey, it just mysteriously got better. So that could be either. It could have been that there was a bad tower near you, or it could have been that there was, you know, some iCloud thing happening in the background when you were on Wi-Fi. Although turning off Wi-Fi in theory should have stopped like an iCloud Photos thing, but it doesn't stop everything from iCloud. So looking at your data usage might have helped that, you know, if your router shows you activity on Wi-Fi, that would be an interesting thing to dig into, because those are the things that won't show up in your, you know, in the battery section of your app listing. So I don't know. Got any thoughts, John?
I have a few thoughts.
Good.
So to your point about the dance or the chat that your phone has with your carrier. One thing, and we'll paste the article here, is that every now and then your carrier may update how your phone has a discussion with their network.
Sure.
And that is known as updating your carrier settings. Sometimes that's forced onto your phone, but sometimes you may actually have to coax it into getting that. And we'll link to the article that tells you, but in a nutshell, you go to Settings, General, About. And if you go there and a carrier update is available, it'll say, hey, carrier update is available. You want to apply it? And I would say the answer should always be yes.
Oh, that's good to know. All right. Yeah, I've got something else, a total tangent, but well, I'll let you finish first. I'm going to let you finish, but...
You're not going to take the mic away from me?
No.
Well, you just did.
I did.
You're pulling
a Kanye.
Kanye.
I Kanye'd you.
I'm going to let you finish. But So that's one thing. And there's an article, and you may find it before I do. I have it on the other machine. I don't know why I do this. The other thing is I would not recommend I mean, if it's between doing cellular data and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, I would actually say that doing Bluetooth and as far as I know, those draw much less energy than doing cellular data. So if you have a choice to connect, well, at least for Wi-Fi, is it between Wi-Fi and cell data? I'll choose Wi-Fi whenever I can.
Sure.
The reason I say that is that when I am traveling, I notice that my battery goes way down if I'm just using LTE data.
Yeah.
I don't know. Another thing, I don't know if LTE draws more power than
it does.
Other. Okay. So another thing is you may want to disable LTE and use a less speedy data.
LTE does if all else is equal. But if you have a better LTE signal than you do, say, a 4G signal, then all bets are off.
Okay. The other thing I should mention is that if you are getting a bad signal, you can typically see that. So if you go into settings, battery, it then shows you what apps are consuming things. I have seen this, and I think this is still the case. I don't see it now, but it'll list the apps. And for apps that use data, if they have a bad signal or low signal, it'll actually say it next to the app. So I've seen this in the past. It'll say like phone, and then in tiny letters, it'll say low signal.
I think that only appears for Verizon users here in the U.S. I should say, I don't think it appears for AT&T users.
All right.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I've never seen it on my phone. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen it on occasion. So that may be a hint that your signal's not that great if you look there.
Yep.
And yeah, you know, I'm almost like I think I told you a while ago, I actually saw some people at one of the putting new antennas in for the Verizon network. And
yeah.
You may just have been. And I actually saw one of my someone that I follow on Twitter was actually interacting with Verizon support saying, hey, I'm on vacation and the speeds suck here. What's up? And they actually actively. That's another thing, you know, Twitter or customer support to your cell provider and say, hey, guys, you know, you may have a tower that's on the fritz. They were working with him. I was actually shocked that they were interacting with this guy saying, we think there is a problem with the tower. You know, we'll send someone out to check it. So,
yeah, cool.
So that's what I got.
All right. I got one other thing here, John, that this reminded me of. So, you know, I'm traveling to Europe, and that meant testing these SIMs that we got ahead of time. And as soon as I put the SIM in to my phone, it told me, hey, there's a carrier settings update, which absolutely makes sense. So I let it do it because I agree with you. The advice is right. And then this company is actually pretty cool. I immediately started getting text messages from them with like a first time password to use to create my account. And then it told me, and I assume this will happen as I move to different companies or different carriers, countries or different carriers, I should say, throughout Europe. But it told me, hey, in the U.S., here's what your roaming rates are if you use this on this current plan. And as soon as I changed my plan, it told me, okay, now your roaming rates would be this. So very cool. But I looked in my messages app when I first plugged this SIM into my phone, and I realized that none of the names appeared next to people. It was all just phone numbers. And I thought, oh, crap. And I realized what the problem was. My phone knows that these are U.S. numbers. So when my phone's own number changed from a U.S. number to a U.K. number, it put a +1 in front of all of these phone numbers in messages. And I don't have +1s associated with most of my U.S. contacts in my iPhone. It's like, oh, crap. I got to go through and manually put this +1 in. No way. Somebody's got to have figured out a way to automate this. And it's true. They have. I found an app called Contacts Optimizer Pro. And so the first thing I did before I ran it was I went on my Mac and I did a backup of my contacts database because, you know, duh. Right. Because I can't lose my contacts. And then I ran this app on my iPhone. And man, this app is outstanding. So it went through first and found all these duplicates or what it thought was duplicates and showed them to me. And it let me pick which ones I wanted to either merge or delete. And I could, you know, pick none or all or any combination thereof. And then it has like this very methodical process. You can jump in at any point, but you know, the sort of the intent of the app is to walk you through this process. So it cleaned up my duplicates. Then it started looking at my contacts and finding, erroneous records or erroneous data points inside my contacts. Again, very easily highlighting all of these things. And this app is free, by the way. They say it's free for a limited time. I don't know what that means, but you should go download it. And it went through and cleaned them all up. And then it did a lot of things that I was very happy to have it do. And then when I got to the international optimizer, it said, do you want to, optimize your contacts? And it showed me a list of 400 contacts. Again, I could choose select none, select all, or anything in between. So I selected all and then scrolled through and unselected a few that were like, it was trying to add a plus one to somebody that I knew that was already in Europe. And, I had a 4-4, but not a plus 4-4 in front of their number. It didn't get everything. It didn't get contacts that had a parenthesis opening the area code. Now, your phone will always show you, if you're in the U.S., the area code wrapped in parentheses, even if the actual data of the contact record does not have it. So if your contact record data has parentheses, then this app doesn't really know what to do. But for all, it fixed most of them for me, and really handy, and obviously much better than going through those 400 records manually. So, it's fun, cool stuff. I don't know. That's all I got. Moving on, John. Should we do? Let's do Kevin. I feel like this will be unless you have any questions about that.
No, I'm the next time I travel out of the country, I'll be much better prepared, because the last time I did it was with an iPhone 4, which is CDMA, and that doesn't work in a lot of countries. Whereas right now my current phone or Verizon, so mine will do CDMA or GSM, I guess, depending on what's going on. As far as I know.
Yeah.
This is now a world phone. But the old iPhone was not. CDMA, I think, only works in U.S., Canada, but very few countries are CDMA is native.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's pretty cool. So, all right. Yeah. And I'm sure I'll have lots of stories when I get back. But all right. So
I wonder how your Wi-Fi is going to work. I think they use slightly different channels. Oh, thank you, downshifting truck. That was nice.
They do. I found out that I probably had this for years and didn't know it, but I have free access to Boingo Wi-Fi hotspots worldwide because I have an American Express card from Starwood, the hotel properties company. I have a rewards card with them, and one of the travel perks I get. I was looking just the other day just to make sure that this card had no foreign exchange fees, because I want to use it, while I'm there. And it doesn't, which is good. And then it also said, you get free Boingo hotspots worldwide. It's like, wow, I wish I'd known that. But I'm glad to know it now. So, but yeah, I think the phone is capable of doing the extra Wi-Fi channels. It's just limited while it's here. But I might be wrong about that. And I
was thinking your devices. But I think it's the same general frequency range. But I think Europe doesn't have a couple of channels that we do.
No, it's the other way around. They go up to 14 there in some countries. Yeah. On 2.4 gigahertz. Yeah. All right. Now we'll go to Kevin, because Kevin says, I had the Mac Photos dream/nightmare client scenario recently. My client has an early 2011 MacBook Pro that was pretty sound, other than that it started with 10.6 and was now on 10.9.5. Never had a clean install and was otherwise running as pretty slow, very slow. I'll leave the political jokes out of it. This client had spent extensive time teaching English overseas. Ready for this? She had an iPhoto library of 226 gigs. It's no different than my wife's iPhoto library. So I feel your pain. I upgraded the MacBook Pro to a Samsung 850 Evo 500 gig SSD, and I did a clean install of El Capitan. Obviously, what a difference in performance. However, the nightmare is going to be getting that iPhoto library, she had not yet upgraded to Photos, over to the reborn SSD-powered MacBook Pro. I put the original hard drive into a USB 3 enclosure, then I rigged that up to a Thunderbolt to USB 3 adapter, which is recognized by the Mac as a USB 3 port, which makes sense. Do you know what the estimated time for transferring that iPhoto library from the enclosure hard drive back to the MacBook Pro was? 2 days, even after it transferred one of the 226 gigs. Of course, I don't expect it to take that long. I had her purchase Power Photos with your MGG code. Thanks. And we plan to use that to split that gigantic library up after conversion to a photos library. She has an existing photos library of recent pics, about 10 gigs. So questions. Number one, she wants to use iCloud Photo Library. She wants to go for the 1 terabyte plan and is already paying for it. Will iCloud back up multiple photos libraries, or can you designate only one? Answering this question very quickly, one. The iCloud Photo Library will, it only manages one library. You can have it on multiple machines and multiple devices, of course. That's sort of the point. But it is one whole library. You don't get to somehow launch iCloud Photo Library and choose multiple libraries in your storage. You could do it, but you'd have to have different iCloud accounts for that. So that's not really feasible. So no, you only get one. Number two, I lament the loss of the Google Picasa app. Yeah, it still works if people have it installed. It was no Aperture or Elements. It probably couldn't even do the basics that iPhoto and Photos could do, but it was a photo manager that used a plain vanilla folder and file structure. Are there any photo managers like it? I remember using Photoshop Elements back in 2014, and it seemed to put a layer on atop, much like the Photos library. And then we'll come back to that. And then number three, in Windows, there are utilities like Fast Copy to speed up the process of copying between folders or a drive or a folder within the GUI. Are there tools like this for the Mac that speed things up, or maybe even a terminal command to use? Do you know of any? I know there have been utilities like that that do some better memory management, like we talked about before, in terms of reading little files and copying them. I thought the Finder actually got a lot better at that with, I want to say, Yosemite. So I think you're already there. And that sort of end of life to all the third party utilities, or Sherlock them, as we like to say. But I don't. Do you know of any utilities like that, John?
For copying? I mean, isn't there, I mean, I suppose you could fiddle the command line. What is there? Rsync and DD and stuff, though. I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, I'm almost certain.
Rsync's pretty, I mean, Rsync is, yeah, it's not, it's probably the wrong one.
Actually, I'm almost certain the Carbon Copy Cloner underneath the covers actually does use.
It uses DD, I think.
Yeah, I think it properly invokes, or it invokes stuff, that's built into the OS to the.
That's true. You could use Carbon Copy Cloner to do it. That will copy a folder from one device to another. No problem. But here's the thing. One of the things that makes the transition of a large library. You could use iPhoto Library Manager for this, though, perhaps, or Power Photos for this. Yeah. So I think Power Photos would be your friend, because one of the things that makes upgrading your, well, no, it's just doing that with hard links, isn't it? So
I'm just trying to, I mean, if you're trying to transfer from one computer to another, then one thing, which nearly all Macs support, is target disk mode. And then you would choose.
Well, but she's not. It's the same computer. He just put a new hard drive in it for her. So he's got the old hard drive is external, and then the new SSD is inside it.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it's all the same computer, right?
Well, in that case, then, yeah, it sounds like USB 3 would it be the fastest connection?
It's as fast as it's going to get, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the speed of the hard drive is the limiting factor here. Yeah, I think USB 3 certainly provides enough headroom. Where I was going with this, and I kept stopping myself because of the way Photos works, was to say, look, if you've got data on one device and then you want to migrate that to, like, again, and this is a bad example because of the way it works, but, you know, migrating from iPhoto to Photos, you're better off having the things on two different devices, except that's not true with iPhoto and Photos. But in a general sense, if you want to make a duplicate of something, it's the most inefficient way to do it with the current HFS Plus file system is to have them on the same, device, because it's got to read and then write that same data. Now, Apple file system, which I think we'll talk about a little bit maybe in the next episode, will will omit that, right? Because it does something similar to what iPhoto, in a totally different way, but iPhoto and Photos do. Because when you migrate an iPhoto library to Photos, it just creates a bunch of hard links. So, I'm wondering if you should just create the Photos library. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference, but convert it to a Photos library on the external drive, and then just copy the end result over to the SSD. It doesn't really matter because the conversion to the Photos library. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it matters. I think it's probably better to copy it to the SSD first. At least you have a backup and all of that. And then you get the benefit of the SSD while it's going through and kind of rearranging things. So, yeah, I don't know that there's a magic answer. I'm trying here. You can hear the wheels churning, but they're not getting us anywhere better. So, yeah. And no, I don't know of any other sort of, you know, Picasa-like photo management apps for the Mac. You know, Photos does so much of what the casual users would need that there's very little need for an alternative there. You know, there's power user tools, but I don't think that's what you want. So I don't know. You got any thoughts on that, John, or are we good?
I think we're good.
Your wheels are turning too. I know.
Well, no, I mean, USB 3 is, it's 5 gigabits per second in theory. So if there's any bottleneck, it would be what you're pulling it off of. So,
yeah. All right. Well,
wait, one more. Well,
yeah, go.
In theory, well, no, Thunderbolt in theory would be faster, correct?
Well, Thunderbolt to what?
If you can go Thunderbolt to, well, I'm thinking, no, if it wasn't, I mean, Thunderbolt, I think in theory now goes up to what, 20 gigabits per second?
But again, there is no such thing as a Thunderbolt hard drive. There are drives that have Thunderbolt interfaces, but it's going to be Thunderbolt to eSATA or Thunderbolt to USB to eSATA, right? I mean, there's going to be a translation because Thunderbolt's just like, you know, plugging into your motherboard. So,
Now that I think about it, the fastest SATA right now is SATA 3, which is 6 gigabits, and that's faster than USB 3, which is 5 gigabits. Okay.
Yeah. All right. I think the Thunderbolt to USB 3 on this is a perfect path. Again, as long as you don't have, you know, some bad component. But I think this, you know, this hard drive was replaced because it's a slow hard drive, right? So moving it to a faster bus probably isn't going to make any difference. And they already have moved it to a fast enough bus. I don't know if it's faster than just the SATA inside that machine, but it's fast enough. So, all right. Well, I think that's all we got time for today, my friend. But the good news is we're going to record the next show in a few minutes here. So that's how it's going to work, I guess. I don't know. Mr. Braun, feedback.
Yes, sir.
Feedback at MacGigGab. Wow. I've done a zillion podcasts this week because I'm going away. So I've been queuing things up. So I just confused the names of two of my shows. There is Gig Gab. That's not this show, I'm certain. And then there is Mac Geek Gab. So feedback at MacGeekGab.com is the address that you can send in all your questions, your comments, your tips, whatever you want. John will be a point man on this while I'm away, but I might check in from time to time because I miss you folks. And if you want, come to our meetup in London on Tuesday night, the 5th. It'd be a blast to see you if you're local. I'll put a link to the Facebook event in the show notes. It's at the Salt House Pub. Yeah.
Maybe stream it. Wow, that'll chew your data. Nah, never mind.
Oh, no, I have unlimited data in London.
Maybe stream it from an iPad or a phone or something.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, we did that at Macworld too. I remember we were doing that at the last Macworld Expo at some of the gatherings. Somebody be running around with a Mac or an iPad.
Yeah. I could Facebook live stream or Periscope it. All right, that's a good idea. Good thinking. I think I got the email address right. Right, John?
I think you did, Dave. It is feedback@MacGeekGab, not MacGeekGab, MacGeekGab.com.
Just in case.
Let's not confuse them.
No, let's not. It's feedback@MacGeekGab.com. Wow, I've really done it to myself. Or premium@MacGeekGab.com. And as I mentioned last week, we have migrated now to a new publishing system at Mac Observer. We moved from Expression Engine to WordPress. The one thing that has not yet migrated over is the premium account management interface. But you can still get there. If you go to MacGeekGab.com, you can sign up for a new one, or you can manage your existing account. With the links are all there. The first page is, you won't know this, except now that I'm telling you, you will. But the first page that you get to from MacGeekGab.com will be WordPress. And then if you click through to the premium stuff, it jumps you over to Expression Engine from there. It will all look very, very similar. So just now you're aware. And if you have any problems, obviously let us know. We'll help you out. We can do whatever you need to do. So very excited. The move went very, very well. So it's good stuff. That's premium@MacGeekGab.com if you want to email us there. Feedback is the other one. Premium's this one. 224-888-GEEK is the phone number that you can call or text. And that's +1-224-888-GEEK for people that are world travelers. John Geek is
4-3-3-5.
Visit our Facebook group at MacGeekGab.com/Facebook. That'll get you there. And join the community. It grows every week, and it's absolutely fantastic. So really loving it. I think that's all we got. I want to thank the folks at CacheFly, CacheFly.com, for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. I want to thank all of our sponsors, which include, of course, Casper at Casper.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG saves you $50. Mack Weldon, MackWeldon.com, where MGG saves you 20%. Smile at smilesoftware.com/geek with text expander. Gazelle at gazelle.com. Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG. Otherworld Computing at maxsales.com. Barebones Software at barebones.com. Have a fantastic week, folks. Enjoy yourselves. Happy 4th of July to those of you that will be celebrating it here in the U.S. I will not be celebrating it here in the U.S., and don't get caught.
Made up.